What's up, guys? This is Tomas here. I'm super pumped about this episode with Richie Butler. We'll talk about his football days at SMU. We'll talk about him being a pastor and a real estate investor, and also his nonprofit Project Unity that I'm fortunate to be involved in. We'll unpack a lot of value for you here, so hope you enjoy it. Cheers.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Tomas Show. Today, my guest is Richie Butler. Welcome, Richie.
Glad to be with you, Tomas.
Richie is a dear friend that I think I had a pleasure to know now for, oh my God, I think it's been 10 years. I remember Richie during my SMU basketball days came to the locker room and spoke to me, spoke to us, spoke to the team. And I think that was the first time I met you. So
yes, I remember.
So I'm just very grateful for our friendship, you know, your mentorship, what you do in our community. And for those reasons and more, I wanted for us to get together. So thank you for your time.
Well, it's my honor and privilege to hang out on the Tomas Show.
So it's funny, you know, I was driving up here and I park, you know, I work in Frisco, obviously, and live more up north of 380. And there was a gentleman standing outside and he just says, "Excuse me, sir, this is a private parking lot." I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble." And, you know, I'm like, "Sir, with all due respect, I'm just going to church." I'm like, "Oh, okay. The gentleman by name Ricky that I just got a pleasure to get to know. So, you know, I think he is a member of a church.
Yes, he's a member here and he's our facilities coordinator. So he's always watching the parking lot because we have people who will park illegally and go across the street, and you know, we have limited parking. He's just protecting the church.
Which I didn't say a word. I knew why he's doing it. I have empathy for that. You know, it's hard to do it. I mean, you have limited parking lot. There's a lot of retail stuff over here. So anyway, so that was just funny, and he was very nice. He walked me up here. So I'm just excited, you know, that we're getting together, and you know, it's your story is very, very interesting. I feel like, you know, coming back from, you know, you played football at SMU for 4 years.
Yes.
I think theology was your degree. Is that correct?
Double major, psychology and religious studies.
Psychology and religious studies. And now, you know, this real estate investor and pastor changing people's lives. I mean, so much great value to unpack. So perhaps let's start with your journey, you know, at SMU. How did you get to SMU? How was your football journey? I would love to hear more about that.
Well, I'll start off by saying that I lost more games my freshman year at SMU than I did of 3 years on varsity in high school. And three of those playoff losses in high school, I mean, three of those losses were playoff games. So, you know, I ended up at SMU being recruited. Forrest Gregg, who was my head football coach, literally came to my house, took his Super Bowl ring off, and I put it on, and I said, "Where do I sign?"
Hey, so, speaking of the power of recruitment tools, right?
That's right. So, but you know, recognizing SMU was in Dallas, a great university, and also, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, so I actually saw the vision of turning SMU football around because I was part of the team that resurrected the program from the death penalty.
Yes, for sure.
And so I just envisioned, man, we could, you know, be on a winning, back in the winning column and doing great things, you know, by my junior, senior year. So that was part of it. And then just getting a great quality education at SMU, can't beat that. And to be honest, I mean, you know, there's not a lot in Lubbock. There's not a lot in Stillwater. Dallas, you know,
it was where it's at. Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming back to what you said, the death penalty, obviously, you know, I'm an SMU, we share that bond, SMU alum as well. How was that experience, you know, coming back, you know, from death penalty? It seems like you just said something, you're an entrepreneur, you were up for the challenge. You know, how was that collectively? You know, as a unit, how did you guys deal with this? Because I'm sure there was, it just, nobody ever goes through it. So perhaps your feelings were different than anybody else's.
Yeah. Well, one, I have several books in me. One book I've had, for many years is life after death. Yes. And really the journey of, you know, being at SMU post death penalty. I mean, it had its set of challenges. I mean, you know, we didn't win a lot of games. I mean, our freshman year, we literally had one of the most difficult schedules in the nation. Mm-hmm. And we were all true freshmen. We played Notre Dame was number one in the country. They had just come. They had just won a national championship. Yes. Houston was number five. Arkansas was top 10. A&M was in the top 25. Texas Tech was in the top 25. Baylor was in the top 25. The only school that wasn't in the top 25 was UT at the time. And they, you know, and they're, you know, competitive. For sure. So, I mean, we literally played some, you know, very difficult teams, had a difficult schedule. And what it did, it really taught perseverance, faith, that, you know, you don't give up. And also it created a bond between me and my other teammates that I believe, you know, still exists today, because, you know, it's just like being in the foxhole. I mean, when you're in the trenches with someone, and it's one thing when you're winning, yeah, and you're in the trenches.
Yes.
It's another thing when, you know, you're losing most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there has to be something that keeps us, you know, focused on something, you know, on the positive and the future and the potential. I'll give one quick story. We played the University of Houston that freshman year. Andre Ware was a quarterback. He ended up winning the Heisman Trophy. They beat us 95-21. Now, those scores are really not uncommon today with the high-flying offenses, yes, we have, yes, but yes. 95-21 was an anomaly.
Yeah.
This was back in the day when Arsenio Hall was on TV, the Arsenio Hall show, and he actually did a bit where he kept raising his hands up like the referee. He said the referees were getting a workout from our game because they were scoring so many touchdowns. But I mean, you know, we lost 95-21, you know, humiliating, you know, disappointing, dejected, everything you can, you know, surmise from that game. The next morning we go into the meeting room and Coach Greg does something. He tells us all to get out of our seats. He says, and follow him. And so we walked, through Ombi, through the tunnel and out of Ombi Stadium onto the practice field, to the football field. Mm-hmm. And then he says to us, men, it's a new day. In other words, last night is done.
Yes.
There's nothing you can do about it. As painful, as frustrating as it was, this is a new day. And it's those moments where, you know, because what happened on the football field will also, you know, life events will happen. And you've got to wake up the next day and know that it's a new day.
For sure.
The deal didn't close, or, you know, you lost out on the commission, or, you know, the company's laying off. I mean, there are so many things that happen in our lives. And I think that's the beauty about sports. It is a life. It can be a great life teacher of how to work with others. Cause you're a team sport. You got to rely on your teammates. You cannot do it all on your own.
Of course.
So as a defensive back, if my other cornerback is a safety, if my cornerback, I need to trust that he's going to do his job and I'm going to do my job. And in business, the same things apply. Mm-hmm. The same thing applies, or whatever you're doing. You in life, you cannot do this thing called life on your own. You need help and you need someone, you know, to walk along with you. So it's just so many great, great lessons. And probably the most significant thing, my time at SMU was that I met my wife. So she, I always tell people this story. She was a cheerleader and she used to chase me around the football field with her pom poms. So,
and she works for American Airlines, right?
Yes, she's executive with American Airlines.
That's
so
fantastic.
Yes,
you're a lethal combination right there.
I married up. I'll just say that. Yes,
well, that speaks
every smart man should marry up.
That speaks level of your humility, of course. So I'm just curious. I'm not a big a football fan. I didn't even know football before when I got here. I just said, you know, what is this game about? What could we do? You know, what can I do to learn? And, you know, and obviously I started watching the Cowboys, started watching different college teams. And then I've noticed, you know, there's something that I really enjoy this sport. So you, somebody that played, what do you think about the Cowboys season? And what do you think about you know, Clemson and an Alabama game, just kind of in a nutshell, because, you know, this is kind of what you went through. So I feel like you can unpack some interesting insights.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll start with the Dallas Cowboys. I think they had a amazing season defensively. You know, they showed up probably 95% of the time, clearly against the Rams. The defense just didn't step up from and stop the run. You know, but I think they have a lot to build upon as an organization. And, you know, I think the future is definitely bright for the Cowboys as it relates to, you know, the Clemson Alabama. I don't think Alabama game. I don't think anyone saw the complete domination that would take place.
That
on
was
the part
stunning
of
to me, to be honest.
Yeah. I think Nick Saban was, you know,
coached really.
He was shot. I think he was. Yeah. And I think also sometimes in life. It's just not your.
Yes. It's not just your day.
It's not your day. I mean, honestly, there are moments when, you know, nothing's going to go your way. And actually, I looked at Nick Saban. I think he's just like, OK, this is
not my day.
This is not our day.
Because he has, what, 5 championships?
At least 5. Yeah. Probably. I don't know.
I was very surprised. And, you know, how one team can really dominate, you know, really. People talk about Alabama as a dynasty almost. Right. So
and they are. But I think it also reflects the fact. That, you know, and that I think there's a movie called on Any Given Sunday referencing pro football, but I think on any given day can be your day to win.
Yes.
Or it could be, you know, your day to lose. And I think we have to live such a life that is balanced and with perspective and purpose that no matter if we win or if we lose, we're not too much of either.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing this. I was just curious, given your background, I thought that was very applicable. I want to kind of transition to your career, obviously, which I think you have multiple fires going on. I don't think, you know,
a kind way of describing it, multiple fires.
Multiple fires going on because, you know, some people just perhaps like to live the comfortable life, are fortunate to have one job. But you, I feel like, I just want to ask, outside of, you know, obviously the being a pastor and then working in a business that you work in, what else, and Project Unity that we're going to get into, but what was your motivation to do all those things? Were you just somebody that couldn't just do one thing and was just drawn naturally to these experiences? Because that's very interesting.
Yeah. So I'll start with real estate. Actually, I'll start with the church. You know, I grew up in the church, and people always said you're going to be a preacher. You're going to preach one day. And to be honest, I did acknowledge that I had a calling to ministry. I never wanted to be a pastor. I sort of ran from that. And eventually, I believe when there's a calling on your life, you can only run so far.
For sure.
And eventually, it will catch you. And so it ultimately caught me, and I had to yield to that. But, you know, in addition to that, from a real estate standpoint, you know, I feel equally called to real estate as I do to ministry, church, you know, being a pastor, in that, you know, I grew up in East Austin back in the day when East Austin was more depressed. I mean, today you go to East Austin, it is being, you know, it's completely gentrified and, you know, being redeveloped. But, you know, then, you know, and I went when I got to SMU and also started doing some work in South Dallas, and I started to sort of research and try to identify how I could go back and transform those communities.
For sure.
And based, you know, having done the research, concluded that real estate developers can do that. I mean, you know, a real estate developer will find a piece of dirt. They'll find a building and they'll renovate it. They'll build something and, you know, recognize also from a faith standpoint, biblically that Abraham was the first real estate developer.
Yes.
And so I just, you know, set out to also, you know, carve a niche in that space because I want to transform communities. The first, you know, real estate company we set up was called Solomon Partners, because I wanted to do what in the Bible, Solomon was the son of David, and David didn't build a temple. Solomon built the temple. So I just believe that we were called to build communities.
I see.
So that, so it is just part of my DNA and my calling.
I see. Well, that's very interesting, because I think many young people look for their calling, and they don't know how to find it. And I feel like as I navigate from, you know, collegiate athletics, was also in the pros in Europe for a little bit, and then, you know, one job, another job. I feel like over time you kind of get to know yourself, most importantly. Yeah. And based on that, you apply, I think, your skill set and who you are ultimately for the benefit of other people. Because yeah. I feel like that's what ultimately I'm coming to the conclusion as a young man is, to your point earlier, nothing happens without other people. And the sooner we realize that we have to give back in some shape or form outside of our, you know, typical job where we, you know, are providers and fathers. You are a father and a husband. I'm an aspiring one in both instances, obviously, but that's coming. So I think, yeah. I think that's very, you know, some essential, something that you highlighted. Project Unity, something that I think you've built from really scratch and yeah. have wonderful support from a lot of local leaders and influencers. I want to hear kind of your motivation behind that. I personally, obviously, am fortunate to be involved because of your yes. generosity. But
no, thank you for your involvement.
No, that goes without us. Saying. It's just, you know, when I look at you, I think you're somebody that I naturally draw to because of your mission to really not only succeed, provide, but also empower others
yeah.
and be a community servant. And I feel like we're relating in that regard. So what was the motivation behind it? Can you talk more about Project Unity? Yeah.
You know, I'll say this, you know, for me, I think Project Unity is symbolic of fulfilling purpose and this notion of calling. And that's not just a religious or a, you know, tied to, you know, faith. But I think we all have, I think we're all put on this earth. Now we may never fulfill it or live it out, but I think there's something that we were placed on this earth to specifically do. And I'm realizing with Project Unity that I'm coming closer to, you know, fulfilling that, you know, how Project Unity came to be. We were hosting a community forum at our church, back in 2014, after the incidents in Ferguson, Missouri, where Michael Brown and the encounter with the police officer. And so we had the DA at the time, the chief of police for Dallas, and the county sheriff, Dallas mm-hmm. County Sheriff, was all at the church, and we had a full house. And one of the things that I noted, there was a lot of anger, a lot of mistrust, frustration. I mean, you name the negative emotions. That was what was rampant. Yeah. I could feel it in our mm-hmm. in the space in our church.
Yes.
And out of that, I really felt compelled to launch and the vision for Project Unity to really focus on bridging divides. And, you know, under really four pillars: dialogue, community building, education, and empowerment. And so that's how Project Unity was birthed. And we started with some forums. We started, we brought five churches together, diverse churches together, to go watch the movie Selma when it came mm-hmm. out. We rented out a theater,
yes.
did a viewing, and then had dialogue conversation around it. And then we launched Together We Ball, Pastors Police Community Basketball yes, Game, yes. which you have served as assistant coach a couple of years ago. And one of the things, Tomas, I want to point out that when I said this is part of a larger purpose and mission for me, because my first real estate development mm-hmm. deal
yeah.
was named Unity Estates.
Wow. Huh.
That was in 1999, 2000. The church I started was named Union Cathedral
okay.
in 2002. The church that I merged the church I started with is St. Paul United Methodist Church,
yes.
which was 2014.
Yes.
And then God gave me a vision for Project Unity.
Yes.
And then we've launched the Year of Unity,
Yes.
In 2017. So I think there is a theme, you know, with my life, and I'm quite comfortable with that. And that is, and we take that, that word unity for granted and think that that's, it's easy to come by.
Yes.
It is not. I mean, I say this all the time. I think trying to get people to come together and to work together is hard work and heart work.
Yes. And I want to share, with your permission, one of my experiences. I mean, one of the biggest reasons what I loved the fact that I was able to get involved is because of how empowered I would always be after I would go to an event and talk to people. And I remember particular, not even the basketball game, that was a tremendous outcome of it of its own. But I remember we had Together We Dine event, which is another initiative under the umbrella of Project Unity. And I remember meeting at, I think it was at the church by SMU.
Yeah, Highland Park United Methodist Church.
And, you know, I remember, you know, just coming casually after work and sitting at a table with people I don't even know. I don't even know who they were. Everybody was kind of looking at each other, you know, trying to vibe. Okay, who is this? What does he do? What does she do for a living?
Yeah.
It was very interesting. And then if I remember the agenda correctly, there was a moderator at each table.
Yes.
And each moderator had a set of questions that then we would go around and answer.
Yes.
And to me, it was such a powerful experience, because it doesn't really matter what we talked about. Which that's the premise, of course, is to bring everybody together and start thinking, you know, as a unit, in with no regard where we're from, what's the color of skin, what's important is what we bring to the table is a thought, it's an idea, it's something that we want to share with others. But I was very surprised. Like, I do sales for a living, so I can talk to people and share my opinion if I'm fortunate to get asked for one. But there were some people that really provided some interesting insight, and I saw something that was very interesting, like a transition from almost a person that is shy, but then when this question was brought up, they just felt connected so much that they would just go on for a minute and articulate why it's so important to them. Yeah. And I think it's such a great experience, you know, overall, probably something not only in this initiative, but if we could do it just as people, as friends at networking events, like, you know, where we could just sit down at the table and have a set of five questions, I think it's such a refreshing way to not only get to know someone, but to talk about something that is of value. Right. It's very unusual. Some people are not comfortable with it. But I think it could be, you definitely have something there. How did you come up with that?
So as a part of the Year of Unity, we launched in 2017, you know, we set out to do a host of programs, like to, and everything was under the Together We. So together you know, dine together, we sing together, we pray together, we worship together, we serve together, we ball together, we learn. And the Together We Dine really was committed to bringing people together to have courageous conversations about race. Because I, you know, we all know there are probably three things we don't talk about. You know, we don't talk about politics. You know, we don't talk about race in our society. And so we need to talk about it.
Of course.
In order for us to, I believe, move forward. And also, part of the premise around our Together We Dine is that this is a listening. An exercise in listening, listening to the other person. And many times especially when we're dealing with a subject matter that sort of has some emotion tied to it. Mm-hmm. Many times we're not really eager to listen. We want to formulate a response or we want to get our point across.
I am like that in a lot of instances. You know, my fiance would always, like, Tomas, you know, and I've been working on it for the past few years. I think I genuinely believe I'm a good communicator, but to your point, so many of us are wired to respond as opposed to listen effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's part of our sort of dismantling, you know, some of our prejudices and unconscious biases and challenges around race, but also I think to humanize people that may look different than us and to also build relationships. Because I think we realize that our stories are not that dissimilar.
Yes.
That at the end of the day, we probably want the same things out of life. But somehow because of cultural differences, and also because of, you know, some systemic, underpinnings, you know, there's this definite, you know, divisive, posturing and play in our society that just keeps us constantly at each other versus, and again, using the sports, metaphor, at the end of the day, technically, especially here in America, all American, we're on the same team.
Yes.
So, I mean, if we're going to fight, I mean, you don't fight with your team. A team that cannot come together and play together will lose.
Yes.
I don't care how talented the players are. And we've witnessed it in basketball and football, especially in basketball where you get, you know, top notch players in the NBA and they still can't win a championship. You're like, why can't they? It's because they could not come together as a team to bring those talents for whatever reason.
Yes.
And so I think our goal with especially Together We Dine is just to get people together to listen and engage in a conversation that is so hard. And I think you said it, and so many people leave there, you know, encouraged and hopeful because they've actually had a chance to talk about something that I believe people want to talk about.
Yeah.
And especially those, I would say a lot of my white brothers and sisters, you know, want to engage in the conversation of race, but they don't know how to, especially with black people.
Correct.
And so we're trying to provide that form, that place that allows people to engage, not just in the conversation, but how do we improve race relations? Cause I believe if, we should be actively involved in improving, through our conversation and through our actions. And if we're not, then we really are part of the problem.
I agree completely. And to your point, I think one of the best experiences that I've ever had was when I was 16. Poland, it's 90%, I would say. I mean, we have foreigners, we have visitors, we have tourists, investors. But the majority population is white, Catholic, and I remember at 16 when I went to high school, I would play basketball with grown men, and we would have pros around from different countries, not only Europe but America, and I felt like that was one of the best experiences that I've ever encountered because I just love diversity. I love interacting with people from all over the world, and I feel like those that haven't been blessed to have those experiences, perhaps we should encourage them to seek that because it would be such, in many instances, it's such an eye-opening experience.
Yeah. And so that's part of my passion and vision for what Project Unity can bring to people who may not have that exposure, because I don't know if people will seek it out or know how to seek it out. So if we can provide the forum, and if we can go to people like, you know, go to churches that are not diverse and engage them with churches that have some diversity so that there's a meshing. And to your point, I mean, when you start to, you know, when you meet someone who's been categorized as your enemy and you realize that they're human and you start to build a relationship, you know, it's hard to demonize someone who's a friend. I mean, it's a challenge with that. More than anything, you become more empathetic and compassionate and concerned for their plight and vice versa.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you said a word enemy, and I don't know if this is instilled by our surroundings, by social media, by national media. I feel like we could talk about it on and on, but I think the great job that you do is you really encourage, you really, help people understand how important that is to do that, to have those difficult conversations, courageous conversations. So if for anyone that would be involved, where they could find more information, perhaps. I know Charlene does a wonderful job. She's amazing. Shout out to Charlene. But if somebody would love to get involved or attend one of those events, what should they do?
They could go to our website, yearofunity.com, yearofunity.com. And if you click, I think there's a volunteer. And I think there's also a calendar with events that are forthcoming. I think we'll be having two Together We Dines in February. And you know, we're doing community, but we're also working with corporations because companies want to bring their employees together. You know, we're having conversations with a law firm who wants to bring their clients together for Together We Dine. And I think there's so many opportunities to engage people. I've even, you know, had conversation with a couple of elected officials down in Austin to get the legislative, you know, representatives to come together for Together We Dine.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. So I'll make sure to provide some of those links, obviously. And thank you again for what you do in that regard. That's very inspirational. And I think people should take notes here, because that, you know, you give up a lot of your free time that you could be spending otherwise by doing something that is with purpose. And I feel like, you know, I know I've been empowered, and I just, you know, love going to events when I get that chance.
Well, thank you. And it's those remarks that keep the flames and the fire burning.
Yeah. So I want to transition to something else, which is your fairly recent appointment to Board of Trustees.
Okay. Not so recent, but yeah, been on it for several years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm probably selling Richie short, which he's selling himself short. So that kind of goes along. But I'm curious. So many prominent alumni, obviously, on that board, including yourself, which I know you don't think you are one, but I say that. How is that experience? You know, because as students, as parents, and I know there's a level of confidentiality pertaining to certain items, but from an overall experience, you know, what are your reflections? How do you feel when you walk into the room and all these folks are there with you, and you really decide about not only the present, but the future of the university?
Yeah, it is humbling. You know, you are a steward of the university's resources, and recognizing that, I mean, you know, we have our tag now is, you know, world changers or shaped here.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, when you sort of take that to heart, that what we're doing is shaping the thinking, the ethos, the moral compass of young men and women, so that they're prepared and equipped to go lead. That is a humbling responsibility. So I really take that so seriously. You know, when I first joined the board, I definitely was in awe because, you know, there are, you know, some, you know, high profile, I would contend, you know, our board of trustees at SMU is probably one of the highest profile boards in Dallas.
And
about some great, you know, great names and, you know, some great family histories that are connected to the university. But quickly, you know, realized, you know, that I was asked to serve on a board, because I bring something to the table and very focused on, you know, realizing, you know, my role, you know, as a trustee member. And that is, you know, to continue to advocate for great education, but also to speak to, you know, some of the challenges of those who we would classify as, you know, sort of disadvantaged or underrepresented populations within the university. So take that to heart, and also making sure that, you know, we're living up to our responsibility as a university to provide the highest quality education for all of our students, across the board and to figure out what is needed so that those students can succeed. Because, you know, the university is only successful as its alumni.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, if we're the last class of great alumni,
yes,
then we're doing the university a disservice. So yes, we want to make sure that my children and your children and our grandchildren, you know, are, if they choose to go to SMU, that they will have, you know, a great education. And furthermore, you know, I believe we're doing such a good job that I know I probably could not get into SMU today.
I'm
glad I got in when I did.
Oh, trust me. I think that was 2006 or 2006. And as a foreign student, I had that advantage that they were looking at my grades in Poland. And I was like, yes, because my SAT scores, you know, I was, I always say that I sounded like Borat when I got here. And I didn't speak that good of an English. And so when we would take those tests, I was like, wow, this is actually pretty difficult, you know, and different particular fields of the test or chapters, whatever. But I took and I did pretty well, but I knew I had to do much better. So I was like, I hope I don't have to retake this.
Yeah.
And so the grades from Poland helped. And today is just, I think, becoming so competitive, not only to get in, but I feel like, you know, we have a lot of wonderful institutions in the area, public or private. So competition to go after those high school students, that talent is disproportionately increasing. So what could we do as a university? What does the board think we could do? What does, you know, our staff, our faculty, what could we do to effectively recruit that next generation of the great, the next graduating class? Because I think that's important.
Yeah. You know, I would say as alumni, to be financially supportive.
Yeah.
Even if you can't, you know, you're not endowing a chair, I think to financially give back is critical. Furthermore, because if we can increase the endowment, then we can provide more scholarship dollars for great students. Because one of the, you know, if we're competing with, you know, with a Duke or somebody,
for sure,
you know, we've got to be able to offer something that's equal or even better. Because, you know, Duke is not they're a part of the aspirant. That's what we're aspiring to, you know, to be like. So we need to offer something that's equal or and even better. And so definitely, you know, the financial aid and support is always critical. And for me, I mean, and you probably can speak to this as well as a former athlete. I mean, I was blessed to have some athletic ability because I probably could not, I know I would not have been able to afford to go to an SMU. You know, my mother's income, you know, would not have supported
for
that.
Sure. And that's, you know, I always say how thankful I am because of the scholarships that you know, we both had. And I think I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for those scholarships, because there's no way in the world my parents would be able to afford it from Poland with the income. I mean, it's laughable when it comes to, legitimately it's laughable what people can make here versus what they can make in Poland. So I'm very thankful for that. And, you know, and kind of on that note, I see so many more conversations by successful entrepreneurs challenging the idea of college education.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's expensive. SMU in particular is expensive. Other institutions are very expensive, very prominent institutions, you know, in top ranks. There's no question in my mind, there never was, about the value of education and why should kids go to college. But I feel like so many people challenge that idea of purely going to school anymore, because I feel like the amount of practical skills and lessons that they learn has dropped a little bit.
Yeah.
So they, you know, I've talked to some of the business owners, and they say, you know, a child could go to, you know, go online, learn some courses, perhaps go seek training, and that's all we need, right? Like, I think it gives them a unique experience. There's nothing like a collegiate experience. But how could we for those kids that perhaps, because they are there out there 100%, that challenge this idea, like, why do I need college? I don't need college. I can just, you know, take applicable training pertaining to what I want to accomplish in life, because they may already have an idea that they want to run a business or design websites or whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
So how can we talk to these parents effectively and to these kids to still encourage and recruit effectively?
Yeah. Well, let me say this. I don't believe, and you know, the stats show this, you know, most people won't go to college, and college isn't, you know, set for everyone, but I think it needs to be an option
for sure.
I think a pursuit for most and many. And I will also say this about college. It provides one with options.
Yes, absolutely.
For life. Further, it also helps to expand your horizons, expose you to thought, to reflection that you would not get otherwise. And so I think there is an intrinsic value to the experience. Furthermore, there are people that you will, you know, interact with in class settings that will, you know, be friends for life. And also relationships, business related, you and I.
Yeah.
I mean, so and some of that is so very critical. And so it's not just one thing. It's not just the, you know, the fact that you get a degree so you can go get a job. That's one component. It's not just the intellectual rigor. It's not just, you know, the liberal arts component where you're learning to critically think. You know, it's not just the networking, it's all of those things that I believe helps to what I classify as a well-rounded individual that's prepared. And I think in college, people can discern purpose, because that's part of that whole process, is also helping you determine, you know, what's your passion, what are you interested in. That's why you have to declare a major.
Yeah, of course.
And I think all those pieces help to shape. So I think for someone to deny or you know, say that, you know, there's no value, I think there is, and there are many great people who have gone on to start successful businesses. But I'll say this: I bet they had to hire someone who went to college to help run that or take it to the next level.
Yes, for sure. No, and I feel like I've been, again, very blessed. I've been fortunate to have 2 degrees from SMU. And I believe those experiences really helped me to be, like you were referring to, a rounded person or a professional.
Yeah.
It's just becoming a very, you know, interesting conversation, as I hear, you know, debates or parents talking about it.
I get it. The cost.
Justification of the cost. So that's something that just, I'm sure, will continue to be discussed and evaluated.
Why I think we also have a plethora of educational options.
Yes.
I mean, whether it's a community college route for 2 years or even high school now, people are given, I mean, they can get dual credit. So by the time they finish high school, they literally come in as a sophomore.
Yes.
And so it reduces, you know, the burden and the weight of the costs overall. So they're just but I think, you know, one has to evaluate that, I think, as a family, student, and parents, to discern what's the best route for their child.
Yes. No, and I agree. And to wrap up, I want to mention something. Richie, we're recording now. I'm not sure where exactly this will be released, but I believe it's January 26th. Richie will get a Silver Anniversary Mustang Award, which is a very prestigious award. I don't think we emphasize enough what type of an accomplishment that is. However, you got it. You said you have to be 25 years out to be eligible, and you got it in your first year. So I feel like that's, you know, that again, that speaks volume of what you've done, not only on the football field, but off the field, what you do in the community, how you inspire others. what you do really too, I think you're building a legacy of sort. You know, you're I'm fortunate to meet a lot of leaders in this community. And I think with your unique background and some of the upbringings that you've had and what you do today, I feel like you have many, many fans, obviously, and including myself, who look up to you in many ways because you have such a unique combination of skills and also, you know, understanding how work could be also incorporated with service, with our civic duties, which is, I think, our obligation and responsibility. And the sooner a young person realizes that, I think the better, because their life will be that much richer in experiences, yeah, in happiness, fulfillment, that it's not just about them. So I think you're a primary example of that. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. You sound like a preacher, Tomas. Nah.
Definitely not. No.
We can set you up for Sunday morning.
Sure. No, it's just, you know, I feel like there's, I don't want to go on tangents, but there's a lot of folks that do amazing work in this community. And I feel like if anything I can do with this podcast is really highlight their successful stories, their what they were able to accomplish, the hardships, the difficulties that they went through to get where they are today, and give them credit. And it has to be articulated and communicated, because those kids that we are referring to, you know, whether they're looking at different educational choices, they need examples of someone to look up to. They need mentors. They need good conversation that will help them get, you know, and make that next step that will make them better. So I feel like you're one of them, and
well, I'll say this: you're one of them as well. Your podcast reflects that, and just your commitment to doing this. So I want to commend you, because I think a lot of times people have an idea, they'll talk about something, but they'll never, you know, move into action,
deploy it.
And so I want to commend you for taking a risk and putting yourself out there, you know, through this podcast to, you know, reach a population of people you may never physically encounter. But their lives are going to be impacted and changed and transformed because you stepped up to the plate. So thank you.
I appreciate you. That's very kind of you to say, and that's definitely, you know, my hope, really the premise, to give back, to help others. And if anything comes out of it, if somebody can get one little nugget out of this conversation or other episodes that will empower them to be better in any other shape or form and apply more action, I feel that would make me happier than anything else.
Awesome. Well, keep doing what you're doing, man.
Well, thank you, sir, for your time, and looking forward to, you know, years of friendship to come.
Can I throw
one thing out?
And this is a selfish, self-interest plug.
It's never
plug,
selfish. No.
But Project Unity, we are hosting a concert called Gospel Goes Classical.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think I got an email about it. That's right.
February 7th.
Yes.
At the Morton Meyerson Symphony Center at 7:30 p.m.
Okay.
We will have a 200 voice Unity choir.
Yes.
Playing in the background with the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, 60-piece orchestra, and the Grammy award-winning gospel artist Marvin Winans from the famed Winans family, brother of BB and CeCe Winans, will be our featured artist. And then we'll have a tribute to Aretha Franklin.
Oh, wow.
And then also Jerry Lynn Johnson, who is one of the renowned female conductors, will be conducting the orchestra on that evening. And it is a fundraiser, our first signature fundraiser for Project Unity. So
that's amazing.
So one can go to mydso.com, mydso.com, if you want to purchase tickets. Perfect. They're going fast, but it's going to be a marvelous night.
And I think for the sake of time, you know, when I think release this, I think I'll make sure that this gets, you know, this gets the priority for the sake of, I think, you know, the event and everything else. And because of I think how important that is to get your message out there. So,
well, thank you very much. Thank you,
Richie. Appreciate it.
All right. My honor.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
What's up, guys? Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of The Tomas Show with Richie Butler. Please, please share it with your family and friends. Your feedback is invaluable. Send me a message. Would love to hear what you think. And I look forward to catching up with you soon. Cheers.